Boss Man Show, friend of the show, Shante Leggins. Eastern Washington Eagles out of the Big Sky Conference, 10-4 right now, and right on the hills of Montana and the Grizz up there. What's good, Coach? How's life out there in Washington, man?
So far, man, weather's good. Sun's out. Just getting home a little bit ago from work, getting ready to go pick up my kids, and then get down to some film, getting some stuff ready for this upcoming two games we got, man.
Yeah, Cole, we talked to you in December about in doing non-con. You were telling us about how you like how your team's improving, you're playing well, you're getting the guys to gel together. So from December to now, Coach, tell us about how good your teams came together, as you kind of mentioned in December, and how you guys are playing well for you right there in Big Sky play.
Well, they're playing good. You know, the only teams we've lost to was Montana and the 10th and the 11th place teams. So we've lost four times in the league. You could always be better. But the guys are playing hard. They're playing smart, you know. A couple letdowns against some of those teams, but we just got to make sure we stay on point, and we just got to keep getting ready for March. You know, we're one big league, and so, you know, you just got to be playing your best basketball when March comes around. You got to be hottest, and you got to be healthy come that time. And I feel like my team's gotten much better since December, obviously. We had a pretty good preseason. Right now we're doing a pretty good job playing on the road, And we're doing some good things. Some players are starting to come out of the woodworks that, you know, you weren't expected early. Obviously, you have your guys that you were, but, you know, the fun part of a season is you get to see some of those young guys and some of the guys that, you know, were kind of like, oh, they're going to be okay. They start stepping up and making some plays for you. And you start relying on some guys a little bit more than you thought you would in December. So it changes, you know, it changes from preseason to season to, you know, beginning of the season to the regular season. And then towards the, you know, the end of the season, you start seeing some guys really step up, and you're going to get their number called a lot more times than they did early. So you see a team maturing, and you see a team just getting better. And so that's the best part about that. So we've gotten better since December.
And I know for you, player development is very key for you. So I know that in practice you're developing your guys on and off the court in film sessions as well with assistant coaches, getting them up shots. So
yeah,
talk about that piece of it, the in-season development, because a lot of coaches try to – some dismiss it, but I feel like you have to develop every day. It's not just off-season. You do it every day. It's a development the whole thing, no matter what we do.
Well, yeah, here, I do it – I don't know if I do it a lot different than a lot of coaches, but we practice about an hour and 15 minutes maybe a little bit longer, depending on what you're trying to do. But I just don't feel that you can get that much out of it. You know, you can sit in the gym for 2 or 3 or 4 hours with your team and just go over some stuff that they're just going to forget about. Or you can, you know, get them in there an hour 15, keep it really competitive, keep guys fresh, but then also get some individual work in, some group work, some film, and you know, still give the guys, you know, a college life. You know, we get in there and we practice around, you know, we get in there, lift weights around 8:30. They get out around 9:30. We'll watch film. Then we'll practice it like around 10 o'clock to around 11:15, 11:30. And then those guys really pretty much get out for the rest of the day unless they want to come out and watch more film or they want to get some extra workouts in. And we do a good job, I feel, as coaches, as really getting these guys in better shape. But also they get to work on their game throughout the season. You know, obviously you want to add stuff to your game in the summer and springtime, but during the season, you know, I think we do a pretty good job of, you know, repping and getting guys to understand what we're trying to do during the season, what they need to be working on. And so, you know, you get all your, you know, all the guys now have workout guys and they go home for the summer and they got people they work with and all that. But, you know, I feel that you can get your team better individually better, just player by player, and that helps the team, obviously, and it helps their confidence out. And I just feel like if you can keep getting those guys better throughout the season, it really shows throughout the season, because guys, all of a sudden you have some younger guys playing really well, and you can tell who's getting work in and who's not. And so that really helps, too. And so you get a bunch of guys that love basketball and love hoops. They start working out during the year a lot. You know, we have a young coaching staff that likes to get out in the gym and work out, and you know, they love the game just as much as the players do, and we're all in it together. And you know, I think everybody buys into what we're selling as a program. And so, if you can get that going, and you get some guys in there working hard, then everyone else follows suit, and it makes life easy.
And speak about the maintenance piece of the strength conditioning program and the nutrition piece and the sleep piece, because I feel like what you're doing is great. Because the Hawks here practice for an hour 20 minutes, and that's it. and it's just 8 minutes of the clock straight through, and it's then you do your thing. You know, it's not I'm trying to kill you like a Tom Thibodeau would or Pat Riley would through our practices. So that don't really work no more. So I was talking about how the evolution of the load management, trying to maintain guys' bodies, maintain their shape, not kill a guy, make sure they still have something left for you in this key point of the season, which is March here in late February into March and March Madness, because you need them to play at their peak right now, for sure.
Exactly. And so, but for us, it's more of an attention thing for me. You know, it's more of a guys keeping their attention for that longer period of time. You know, I think these young men, they got their bodies in shape. They got these weights and everything like that. I think it's more of an attention thing where, you know, they don't pay attention. They're just not, they're going half, you know, than what they should go. They're going to sprain an ankle. They're going to hit a knee or something. And you want guys to be fresh. You want guys to be healthy. And it's a real fine line because some coaches, I mean, and there's some really good coaches, Hall of Fame coaches that practice 2.5-3 hours. And it's just like, you know, for me, it's just, I can't keep my attention that long. And so when you're looking at it, you know, you want your guys to stay focused, stay sharp and understand what you're doing. And, you know, take all the information in that you're giving them and make sure they can reply it the next day or they can apply it towards the game plan. And so, you know, I feel like some of the young men of today's, you know, their nature is not to keep an attention span that little. They usually lose their attention as the practice starts going on, and you can see that, and then you get frustrated, and then there's other things that can happen. If you keep it fresh, if you keep it moving, if you can keep those guys really attentive and understanding what you're trying to do, and you're really – and it's competitive for that hour and 15, hour and 30 minutes, then you get a lot out of it, you know. And shoot, if Pat Riley – wanted me to practice 4 hours and he was paying me what he was paying them boys, I'd be out there diving on the ground for 4 straight hours. So if you're going to tell me, you're going to give me $1 million, and I'm not even saying what they make, but if you give me $1 million, I'm on it. I'm diving anywhere you want for as long as you want. But, you know, these young men, I think they just sometimes, I just don't feel, and some guys are different, some guys can do it, but I just don't feel as a group you can keep a team's attention span, especially some young college kids. Attention span that long and still get out of it what you can get out of it if you keep it competitive and you keep it moving and you keep it fresh. And so I also feel like later on you can keep those groups and keep those things tight too, about 30 minutes 40 minutes so they understand what they're getting. So at the end of the day, they're still getting their work in, but you know, we're giving them it's a little bit different than just sitting there. And sometimes in practice, guys are just sitting watching the other guys who you're trying to get ready for the game, and they're still not getting the you know, you won't be able to see those bench players create as they get better.
And I think you made a great point about, you know, playing, you know, some young men who really show you something and doing the preseason here and in season here in the Big Sky, because in that Big Sky tournament, you got to play days in a row. So having depth, wow, night two and night three, you got to, when your legs are kind of dead and tired, man, having guys you can go to, this 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe 11th guy you can trust and depend on to execute, give you buy you some minutes here for your main guys is very key this time of year, knowing that tournament has been a 1B league where it's all or nothing.
It's big, you know, and you never know. Somebody gets hurt, foul trouble. You know, sit. You never know what's going to happen in those three games. You got to be your best at those for those three games. And if not, you could be. I tell the guys all the time. You know, you lose a game here and there. That's fine. Right now, you can go 30-0, 31-0, and get into the Big Sky and lose that first round. Season's over. You know, bring it in Cancun, as they say. You know, and so it's curtains. But if you're playing your best basketball and you got depth and you got guys who are confident, you got guys who are ready when their number's called, no matter what's happening, you have a chance to win it. And that's the whole thing. And that's, you know, we're not like, you know, one of them Power Five schools where they get 12, you know, where they get 6 to 7 to 8 teams in for, you know, having a 17-17 record, but they did cool in league. You know, we don't get that, you know. We need to be playing our best basketball at the end of the season for those three games in March. It's great to win the conference championship. That's a terrific, that's a great carrot, that's a great goal to have. But the real goal is you want to go to the NCAA tournament and make some noise and play your best basketball and see where the chips may lie. And that's something that the players, coaches, fans, you know, alumni, people don't forget that. You know, we, you know, our school's been to the tournament 2 times in their whole existence. So, you know, that's number 3, you know. And so those things, we don't look those things lightly. We try doing everything our best to get there. And if you have that opportunity and you feel like you have the better team, you got to be playing your best basketball, and the guys got to be believing, and you got to have guys ready. And when you do it like that and you have them ready and they come out there and they perform, you have a chance. And the last 2 years we've been in the conference championship game. We lost both times, and, you know, I felt we had shots to win it, but we didn't. Montana went ahead and beat us both times, and, you know, it makes it a little fun rivalry here and there, but, you know, it ain't a rivalry until you can beat them. And so, exactly. You know, you're hoping you get that same opportunity, and you just got to keep grinding for that time. And I think our guys they'll perform, and they're excited for the challenge. And losing a game here or there, you know, we're a game behind Montana right now. Speaking of Montana, in our league right now for first place in the conference, and you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a wild conference tournament. So we're looking forward to that. And I think all the fans will get their money's worth if they come out there and check us out in Boise.
Yeah, I'll cheer for you guys on those two games. I watched them on TV. I was cheering for you, too. And I know Coach DeGale was on the show, but I was definitely cheering for you. You see, it was your time to shine. I was definitely cheering for you.
We needed it, boy. We had some good teams, man. Last year, we hit the injury bug last year, and we were playing without one of our better players, but we had other guys step up. And this year, we haven't been injured. You know, we've had some injuries, but not that are going to sit anybody out. When you could play with guys that you expected to play and you're ready to go, then it really changes a lot. And so, you know, game to game last year, I mean, last year we had, you know, something crazy, like 16, 17 different starting lineups. This year we've had four guys start every single game, and one guy got injured early in the season, but he's primarily been a starter. And so when you have that continuity, I think you give yourself a chance, especially towards the end of that year.
Well, Coach, you got Sacramento State coming up here, and that's their next game. So what are you saying for those guys on the film as you get ready to play them this week here?
They're tough, man. They're tough. They're a tough crew. They play the game a lot different than what you're seeing. You know, what teams are trying to do now with space and pace and playing with a lot of, you know, speed. They really do a good job of, you know, slowing teams down. They keep teams down in the 50s. You know, they're one of the best teams in the country at you know, points per game. You know, they hold teams to under like 56 points per game, which is top four in the country. And then on the flip side, us, we're one of the top scoring teams in the country. I think we're fourth or fifth. And so you got two teams that play two totally different styles of basketball going against each other. And at their place, you know, we average 82 points a game, and at their place, they held us to 59, but we won. We won 59-52, so we played in their pace, their, you know, how they play. And so we're hoping that we can come up to our place and speed the game up a little bit, play a little bit faster, up-tempo, you know, and make them, you know, play with us. But, you know, they're a good team. They're well-coached by Coach Katz. He does a very good job with his team. He always has them prepared, so it's going to be a fun game. You know, we have two really good games that you know, this weekend that we have to win. They're must wins for us if we want to even have a whiff at the conference championship, league championship right now. And so we got to do what we're supposed to do and handle business at home, which you should. But again, you got a team that came in here last year and beat us at our place. And then you got NAU, who's doing a really good job, and they're coming in on Saturday. And that's going to be another challenge for us because they're a very good offensive team, and they do a great job defensively. So, you know, we got to be able to play two different styles heading into this week.
For our listeners here, I got one more for you, coaches. Tell our listeners about your big three of Mason, Jacob, and Kim. Those guys are your three world beaters that lead your team right now. Two of them almost have double doubles. One's averaging double double. One's very close to it. So talk about those three young men, Mason, Kim, and Jacob. What they mean to your roster, your big three at Eastern Washington.
Yeah, so we got three guys that can really go, and you know, Kim Akin, he's a sophomore, and he's averaging a double double this year. You know, he's doing a lot of things that he's getting some looks. You know, he made some draft boards, and some guys really looking at him. And, you know, you make draft boards nowadays, I think it's something that guys really love. You hear about it a lot. And so, you know, he's doing a great job of defending. He's probably our best on-ball defender. He can guard any position. He's about 6'6", 6'7", so he can guard any position for us. We have him guard the 1 through 5. It doesn't matter. Usually the other team's best player, we have him defended. But he's a really good, he's a sharp shooter. He could defend, you know, he's just a tough kid. And so he's only a sophomore. Then our leading scorer, Jacob Davison, he's a big time scorer. Again, he had 30 again last against Portland State. He had 34 the night before. I mean, he's a big time scorer. He could do it all and score on all different levels, you know, You know, a lot of coaches say the mid-range jump shot and they don't like that kind of stuff. I like it. And, you know, if you watch any NBA basketball, if you watch any college games, when a guy goes to win the game, he's usually shooting a mid-range jump shot or he's shooting a floater in that area. And so when people say the mid-range jumper is dead, I don't believe it. This kid, this young man could score on all three levels. And, you know, he hit multiple mid-range jump shots the night before to really put the game away for us. And, but he's also a great three-point shooter. So he's doing well there. And then Mason, our big guy, he's a senior captain. He's our leader. He does everything you ask for him. He's probably one of the smartest basketball players I've been around in a long time, especially at that position, doing everything he can. He's like our Urlacher. You know, we call him our middle linebacker because he does everything for us. He talks on defense. He talks on offense. You know, he leads. He's also married. He was married since he was 18. So his maturity is through the roof. He's more mature than some of our coaches. And so when you got that kind of maturity from a guy like that, and you know, he had a game this year where he had 54 points. It was against a non-D1, but it was a big scoring game for him. And he's as the last like 6-7 games, he's averaging 20 points and about 12 rebounds and 3 blocks and 5 assists. So he's playing really well. And you know, he does a good job. He doesn't have to score to really attribute to our games or wins or anything like that, but he does. And you know, he's shooting about in those last 6-7 games, he's shooting about 60%, and he's shooting about, you know, 40 from three. So he's doing it all for us. And so you got those three guys, and then obviously you got the supporting cast around them that are really good, that are just budding stars. You know, they're going to be really good themselves. And you know, they're understanding their roles right now. They're understanding when their number's called, they need to be ready, and they're understanding that. And so when you got some young guys, and, you know, Mason's really the only senior who's playing for us. So if you look at that, and you look at the future, you know, the future's really bright for Eastern Washington because all the young guys we got, all these guys are gaining experience as freshmen, and we're still winning. I mean, we're 17-8, you know, with the non-conference we have and those types of things. When you see that, it's like, man, Eastern's got it rolling right now, and you got some good young talent there, and you got some kids coming in that are really good. And so you got those three guys. Mason's going to lead. Someone's going to step into his, you know, shoes. He's got some big shoes to fill, but I feel we got a young man who's a sophomore this year who could definitely step into those shoes and play the same way and maybe be better offensively and not defensively, but offensively right away because he's got so much talent and touch. And so as you just keep going through and you're looking at our roster, I mean, one senior, two juniors, everybody else are freshmen and sophomores, and I'm feeling really good about the future and where we're headed with Eastern Washington.
Well, Coach, I'm going to definitely keep an eye on you. Of course, you know I'm going to keep an eye on you guys, man. I'll be cheering for you in the Big Sky. I hope you all catch Montana and get the job done in time in Boise, Coach. I want you to make it the big dance, man. I want you to get the third one for Eastern. I want you to do it, man.
We trying, man. We're trying to get that trilogy, baby. Anywhere we can get it, we're trying to go get it, man. And I know you got Coach Romar in here next. Make sure you tell him hello for me because he's one of the best coaches to do it, man. One of the best men I've been around. You know, as a young man, and he, you know, he's somebody that, you know, I looked up to as a player and as a coach, man. He does it all. He does it well, and he's one of the most well-respected coaches I know. So you got to make sure you tell him hello for me.
I'll do that, Coach. Hey, Coach Leggins, anytime, brother. We'll hope to talk to you again in March, man. We'll get to the big dance, buddy.
Man, I hope I'm talking to you because that means we made it.
Yes, indeed. But, Coach, have a good one. Talk to you real soon, brother.
All right, brother. Have a good one.
All right. Shout out to Leggins on the Boss Man Show.
Grab a hold of Big Breakfast flavor at Hardee's. Try two breakfast sliders for just $2.99. Get Applewood smoked bacon or freshly grilled sausage with fluffy eggs and golden melty cheese all on a toasty little bun. Good morning. Start at Hardee's. Available now for a limited time at participating restaurants. Tax not included.
All right, folks, back here on the Boss Man Show. Here with Coach Mark Montgomery, the Northern Illinois Huskies out of the MAC Conference. Coach, how things go up there in DeKalb, man?
Well, it's cold right now, but it's nice and warm in the gym when we have opponents come in. But everything else, when you're in first place, you feel pretty good. But we have 5 games left, so anything can happen.
Yeah, Coach, I was just up there in Illinois for the All-Star weekend with the Hawks and Trae Young and those guys, man. I was freezing, man. I was glad to get back home to Atlanta on Monday morning for sure.
We feel the same way when we're on the road. And we just had an Ohio trip, and the temperatures from Ohio to Illinois is definitely – it's definitely a difference, but we like it here in the fall, in the summer, because the weather's great.
And
we don't have to deal with your humidity.
You got there right, because it will tap you out in a heartbeat, won't it?
Yep.
Yes, indeed. Well, Coach, you're in the middle of year nine leading the Huskies. So tell us, Coach, what's been your greatest accomplishment in your mind since taking over this program 9 years ago?
Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
I'll say, what feel like your greatest accomplishment has been since taking over this program 9 years ago?
Well, the conference, you know, since I left Michigan State, it's always the MAC conference is always challenging. And I'm coming off of, the last couple years, we had to deal with Buffalo, who won multiple games in the NCAA tournament. And then before that, it was Ohio, Kent State. So the MAC conference is one of the top mid-major conferences in the country. We're ranked anywhere from 9 to 11 with the, you know, when they rate, if it's the Big Ten, the SEC, the Pac-10, the Pac-12, whatever. So, you know, being a top 10 in a top 10 conference, you have to make sure you recruit well. You have to have good players. They have to be well coached, and you have to get them from just about everywhere. You know, we have them from the Midwest to the West Coast to down south. We have a kid from Atlanta on our team, so you know we've got a few transfers. So, but the lead, it's one of the top leads, like I said, in the country, and we look forward to that. It helps recruiting.
Yes, indeed. And I feel like, you know, the MAC is, like you said, one of the best mid-major conferences in America. And, Coach, I feel like you can get, like I say, it's kind of with your location, you can get kind of players from all over, one opportunity to play, who might not get that high major offer, but can still play in a pretty quality mid-major conference and still get seen. Because I tell you, I mean, all the time, Coach, is this. If you put out good film and good tape, the scouts going to find you. You'll play overseas or the NBA or the G League somewhere. But if you play the right way and you develop over your 4 years in school, by the time you become a senior, somebody will find you and find a place for you. And if you want to be basketball, your career before you hang it up for good.
Well, just talking two players from we had two seniors last year, Levi Bradley and Dante Thorpe, and they both averaged over 15 points. They're both playing over in Europe right now, so they have good contracts. We have Marin Maric, the European kid that came over here and played for 4 years. He's over in Turkey playing. So the better players in our league have gotten contracts in Europe. C.J. Massenburg was at Buffalo. He has a 10-day deal. He's in the G League or the D League, whatever league they call it now. So the better players, if you're all conference on one of our first, second, or third teams, oh, you get looked at. You know, you get invited to Chicago. You can get invited to Portsmouth. Like our best player right now, who's lead the lead in scoring, Eugene German, the last 2 years he's tested the waters. He had NBA trials in Chicago, Milwaukee, Indiana, Detroit. So it's not like he's not seen. You know, I think when you're in our conference, we get to play against like some of the non-conference games we played this year, Iowa State. We played St. Mary's, who was in the top 25, Pittsburgh. Over the years, we played Marquette, DePaul, Michigan State. So, you know, being in our mid-major conference, we're still playing an unbelievable schedule where our best players are being seen by NBA scouts. And like you said, it doesn't matter what conference you're on. The scouts and the European scouts, they come and watch. They know a kid if he can play or not.
Yeah, they're right. Now, Coach, last year you guys won 17 games. So what did you guys prioritize in the spring and summer and fall to get ready for the season? Because you all are doing very well this year so far.
You know, we went 17-17 last year, and we lost in the semis to Bowling Green by 2 points. And then Buffalo ended up beating Bowling Green in the final. And we had a good nucleus of that team coming back. For us, it always starts in June, where our guys come up about like June 15th, and we have a summer session where we get to work with them 8 weeks. But, you know, in the summer it starts with just our strength and conditioning program, getting our young guys acclimated to our system. But just building cohesiveness with the incoming team. So, you know, for us it starts in June. We're there in July, 2 weeks in August. We give them a break, and then we kind of gear up in the fall just for our preseason because we knew we were going to have a tough schedule. But just working on the fundamentals, you know, anytime you can dribble, shoot, and pass those things and you get those things better, and then you get sound defensively. We're one of the top defensive teams in our conference. And just getting everyone on the same page, I think it helps you to have a successful year. And, you know, knock on wood, we stayed injury-free so far, and that helps too.
And, Coach, I want to point out the conditioning program because that's key to the nutrition piece, the sleep piece, the lifting piece for maintenance and for bulk, keeping guys healthy from November through March because, you know, this spans over two semesters from November through March. That you get these guys healthy, they got to play hard for you at least twice a week starting in January and February with the conference play in March and then the tournament on top of that. So this time of year, Kevin, guys to peak at the right time and not have them be gassed is very important. So how's it going about trying to pace yourself with the guys, giving the guys bouncing enough rest versus work to make sure the guys can peak for you right now, where it's very crucial with these last five games, plus the MAC tournament in Cleveland there?
Well, you know, like you said, it starts in the fall for us, and we know it's a marathon and not a sprint where, you know, you start off your preseason where you're going, you know, 2.5, 3 hours. What we try to do is we still try to lift twice a week. Our practices are already cut down to about an hour 15. You might spend another 15 minutes on film. But, we're fortunate enough to have a nutritious bar. We have a full-time strength and conditioning coach. But, like, the stuff you're talking about, we preach to them, rest. You know, right now it's just eat, sleep, schoolwork, basketball, and then rest. And that's so important. And then especially up here in the north where the elements of the winter, you know, you got to have your hat on, your gloves, your jacket, your scarf, because you're traveling, you're in and out of planes, you're on a bus. So that you have to eat, and we do training table, you have to eat and sleep and drink a lot of liquids. It helps. And we've kind of stayed away from the flu, thank God. Hit us a little bit, but you know what? We preach it, and we have different people to come in and talk to them and give them those little seminars or those little pep talks. Because you're right. Right now, we want to be playing our best basketball come March. So we're not trying to overwork them. We just want to make sure our guys are sharp, focused, pay attention to detail, go out there and bring their best on game day, and that's all we can ask.
And, Coach, you got 7 wins in non-conference play. Had to make you really happy because, like you said, you guys played a tough non-con schedule challenging your team. To get 7 wins out of that, knowing what the gauntlet you guys played, had to make you really happy as your guys jumped into MAC play after the preseason conference, non-conference play there.
You know, we always try to challenge ourselves in the non-conference because we know the conference is important. You know, we had a Valley team. We played Northern Iowa to start the year. We knew they were going to be good coming in. They're leading the Missouri Valley right now, and they kind of got us at our place. But like I said, when you play, we played Oakland, we played Topping, we played Longwood, we played St. Mary's, Iowa State. I think all those teams prepared us for conference play. It doesn't matter. Non-conference, we had dogfights going into the year. We're not in uncharted waters. So we knew going into the year before the MAC conference started, what we needed to work on or what we needed to get better at because of our non-conference schedule challenged us. And I think it helped. You know, we lost some games, but we also won some games. You know, we went on a 6-game winning streak in the non-conference. Just for happens, we had a 6-game winning streak in the MAC play. I think when you play tough schedules, it gets you ready for it. We're going to take our lumps. You're going to win. You can lose one or two games, but in the long run, we know we're going to win more games then we lose if we stay the course and we keep plugging.
And right now you guys are 8-5. You got 5 games to go, and the MAC is a very tough conference there. So I know you guys are trying to keep – so how are you trying to tell your teams to kind of prepare? They're like a mini-series here. We got 5 games to go. We just kind of tune up for the MAC tournament because that's really where it counts because, you know, you can't depend on the at-large bid. Sometimes in the major conferences, you have to really depend on that automatic bid. So are you trying to tell them this is a mini-series that's trying to win these 5 games to secure our spot seeding the tournament-wise so we can try to make a good run there in Cleveland?
Well, what we're trying to do is, you know, we want to win the MAC West, so we're a game up on Ball State and Central Michigan. So we've positioned ourselves in a good position. Now, the goal over that is to get a first-round bye to Cleveland and don't have to play in the play-in game on a Monday night. So if we just, you know, if we could finish strong, like you said, we had 5. We had 3 at home, 2 on the road. You know, it'd be great to win them all. We're concentrating more on Central Michigan this weekend, and that'll get us to 9. You know, in our conference, previous years have shown if you win 10 or 11 games, 12 games, you got to get that first round bye. So it's in reach for us. Bowling Green and Akron, they're sitting at 10-3. So you never know what a shakeout. If we can go on a five-game streak, they lose a couple games, and we tied for the best record, that'll help because that potentially can get us an NIT berth. But if not, you know what? Let's just take care of business, what we can control. If we just win our home games, more likely we'll win that the MAC West. But like you said, you want to keep momentum. I just want our guys playing the best basketball before we get to Cleveland. And then it's a three-day tournament there, and I take my team up against anyone in those 3 days.
You kind of mentioned home right now. You guys are doing great at home right now, Coach. 9-3 at home. So talk about the emphasis of what your guys are winning at home, defending the home court there and the gap there.
Well, you got to win your home games. If you're going to compete for a MAC West championship or an overall league championship, you got to win your home games. And in conference, we've only lost one to Akron. So we've been defending home court. Nothing's a given. You got to earn it. But if we take care of business at home, steal maybe one or two on the road, then it's something special. You try to split those road games because it's not easy when you go to Kent State, Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, you know, Buffalo. But you know what? My team's been fortunate enough that we've won six road games this year, which is huge, five in conference. So we gave ourselves a chance. So we just got to finish strong here. And like I said, pay attention to detail, play with great energy, play with great effort, and then let our defense lead to some offense, and I think we should be fine down the stretch.
That's one I got for you, Coach, is who have been some coaches in your career who really helped you along the way, kind of gave you a spark to want to get into coaching and lead young men and help young men play a role in their lives and being great husbands, fathers, and just great overall citizens going in and allows out to basketball?
Well, it always started with my dad. He got me involved in the game, even though he's passed away. But when you got a father figure in your life, growing up, that does help. But then from there, it goes to my high school coach, Ernie Price, that it's funny that you ask because he still comes to my games when we play the schools in Michigan. I grew up right outside of Detroit. So my college coaches were very influenced me a lot, from Tom Izzo, who recruited me, and I played under Judd Heathcote for 4 years. And then when I got my chance to get into coaching, Jay Smith was at Central Michigan at the time. He gave me my first opportunity. So I was there for 4 years. And then I went back to Michigan State and worked for Tom Izzo for 10 years. But I also say the assistant coaches you work with over the years, you learn a lot from your assistants. And then you also learn a lot from other assistants and head coaches throughout the country. And I got a good network, but just the Michigan State tree, when it was Mike Garland, who was a head coach at Cleveland State, Doug Wojcik was a head coach at Tulsa, Jim Boylan, right now he's the head coach of the Chicago Bulls, and he was at Utah. You know, Brian Gregory, who's down at South Florida, he also coached at Georgia Tech, and he was at Dayton. I worked with these guys, and all those guys help mentor me. And then it's just the meetings within the meetings and the talks within the talks that you get a chance to talk basketball. And then the players that you're associated with that you get to coach, they teach you a lot through those relationships. So I've had a lot of people that was very instrumental in my development and helped me become the man who I am.
Definitely miss Coach Gregory. He's a great guy. I hate that Georgia Tech let him go, but I'm glad he's doing well in South Florida. But I definitely miss him. He was always good to come on the show, always a good guy to talk to, on and off the court as well.
Yeah, you know, BG, as we call him, he's turned a lot of programs around. And like last year, South Florida went in that CBI, and they're in a tough conference now, still chasing their goals. But unbelievable person, like you said, off the court. Wit, humor, just a good individual to break bread with, and I enjoyed my time. I got 4 years with Coach Gregory, and very good person, good family man.
Coach, my grandma, thank you for your time today. It's been great to get you on the show finally. Hope to do it again with you real soon. Coming to Final Four this year, Sheila. Hope to see you in Atlanta. I'll be at the Final Four events.
I'll be there. call me up if you want me on. I'll be down in Atlanta. Hopefully my team's down there, but if not, I'd definitely be sporting college basketball. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime, Coach. Be safe. We'll definitely hit you up that weekend for sure.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, it's Marv Montgomery on the Boss Man Show.
Sally Beauty's new all-in-one hair color kits make it easy to color your hair at home. Get everything you need to color for beautifully radiant results. Loved by professionals, open to everyone. Sally Beauty.
All right, folks, back on the Boss Man Show here with Atlanta Hawks guard Brandon Goodwin, our Florida Gulf Coast. Brandon, what's up, my brother?
Nothing much, man. How you doing?
Man, we're doing good up here, man. Ready to support you guys tomorrow night against the Dallas Mavericks, man. I know y'all got a big win last night against Miami. Trey Young went off, man, for 50 points. So tell us, man, sitting there watching Trey go off last night, how was that vibe in the arena last night, man?
Oh, it was crazy. You know, first game back from the All-Star break. So, you know, we had a pretty good turnout. And like you said, Trey put on the show. It was Quavo night, so, you know, Quavo got to be honored on a special night for Trey, too. So, you know, it was a win-win situation, and just glad we pulled out that W.
No doubt, man. The Hawks on the rise, man, for sure. So, I ask you one thing about Trey Young, man. Seeing this young brother progress and develop, a guy who you're a little bit older than, but you're seeing him as a leader of the Hawks roster going forward, the focal point, man. How's it been to get to learn from him and Coach Pierce and have worked with those guys on the roster and the development coaches as well to make you a better player from being around Trey Young and his greatness so far?
It's been real special so far. You know, it's eye-opening for me, you know, what he can do. On the floor, I just try to learn as much as I can from him as possible, just as far as, like, you know, his relentlessness, just going out there and competing every night, you know, even when he's tired. You know, he's just, it's just something special about him, man. I don't know what it is, but, you know, he just got that mentality, you know, that he's not going to be stopped. And I think that's the most important thing that I've learned so far is, you know, you got to have all the confidence in the world. And I think he has that. You know, he has the opportunity and the time to be great. So I'm looking forward to learning as much as possible as I can while I'm around him.
And you also got a good vet to help you out in Jeff Teague as well, man, a veteran of the game, former Atlanta Hawk, back in town, man. You've been from the cross. You already know what time of day with Jeff Teague. Talk about having him back to help you out as well to kind of learn from him and that vet and how he helps you and Trey both for all the knowledge he has for playing so many years as Jeff has.
Yeah, man, he's been great for us so far. Me and Trey, you know, he uses his voice. You know, he tries to, you know, help us out as far as, like, reading the game. You know, he's helping me and Trey out a lot in that aspect. And just his presence, man, his energy, you know, he has that calm approach to the game. He's never rattled. You know, he plays the same way night in and out. And so, you know, just having him around in the locker room and on the court has been a big difference for at least me and Trey so far. So looking forward to, you know, finishing the season out with him and learning as much as I can.
Now, Brandon, you went undrafted out of Florida Gulf Coast, man. How much did that chip stay on your shoulder about being undrafted, about that 30 teams passed up on you, didn't draft you in the draft, man, but you got a break, played some league with the Memphis Grizzlies, got with the Hustle, signed with Denver for a while on a 10-day, let you go, and Denver brought you back on a two-way deal. Now you're with Atlanta back home. So for your journey so far, man, what's the chip on your shoulder about knowing the teams passed up on you originally, but now the Hawks figured out and saw something to you, man, that, hey, you know, you got something special going on, like I can show you on Orlando in December.
I just knew my path was going to be different than a lot of other people's. You know, I knew I was going to go undrafted. I knew I was going to be overlooked because of a mid-major school I was at or something like that. I just knew that, you know, I believed in myself, for one. And I never let bad times, like, define who I was or what type of player I was. You know, I always believed in myself, and I knew that I could make something out of nothing, no matter the situation. And, you know, I keep my head down, stay in the gym. I have positive people around me who's always supporting me, you know, my mom, my girlfriend, my friends. They always showing love and keeping my spirits up and,
in times where I feel like I should have more or something like that. You know, they keep me level-headed. And I pray, man. I pray to God, and I also work for everything I've done. Like, nobody can take that away from me, that, you know, I worked and I earned my way to this deal. And so my thing was just, you know, staying ready when the opportunity came. I think I took full advantage of every opportunity, you know, that was given to me so far by the Hawks. And that's all I can, you know, put my pen on, just, you know, staying ready for the opportunity. If I wasn't prepared, then, you know, I could blame myself. So just being ready, and also remembering, you know, my path is always going to be different than someone else's. So just staying humble.
And when I had the opportunity to sign with the College Park Skyhawks, how much did I jump out to you? So I can play at home here, play with the Hawks on a two-way deal here, play in College Park right here where in my familiar surroundings, and build something special here right in my backyard.
Oh, it was eye-glaring. Once me and my agent, you know, saw that situation, we kind of made a plan, you know, from the beginning. Like, you know, it might not go the way I want, so, I mean, at first, but, you know, I'm at home. There's going to be opportunities. Just, I have to prepare myself the best way I can. And just having College Park right down the street from, you know, the Hawks was perfect. You know, they got to see me practice. They got to see my development in the G League. And, you know, I'm not all the way in Erie having to go back and forth. And so, you know, I was around a lot since August. So they were familiar with me. They understood that I knew, like, you know, I knew how to play the game, and I had that good energy coming off the bench or whatever. But, you know, they just gave me the opportunity, and just me being at home has been great. You know, my family is here, my girlfriend is here, my mom's here, my friends are here. So it made it a lot easier knowing that I had a support system around me that, you know, that kept me uplifted at all times.
You know, Brandon, I told you it's off the air, man. On 12:30 in Orlando, a place where you went to school at UCF for 2 years, man, you went off, came off the bench with 21.6 assists. I feel like that night pretty much put your name on the map. It's probably a good third point guard for the Hawks, because the Hawks didn't really have a point guard behind Trae Young, and they got Jeff Teague, but they saw something in you that night, man, and you didn't really go back down after that. So I feel like that's the night that really keyed you to get the deal you signed a couple weeks ago. So in your mind, night in Orlando, what does that night mean to you with knowing you went to school there and the performance you put on, knowing it, which probably helped you where you are today, being on the Hawks roster as a full guy, not a two-way guy?
I was just comfortable, you know, in that arena. You know, last time I played in that arena before that game was the NCAA tournament against Florida State. And, you know, we came up short, but I played a really good game. And so I was comfortable, and it was home for me. It's like a second home for me. You know, I had some old coaches and old friends in the stands. And so it felt familiar. You know, unlike other NBA arenas where it's just like, you know, you're looking around like, wow, I've never been here. It felt normal. And so, you know, I think I took advantage of that opportunity, and the Hawks, you know, saw something that, you know, other people didn't see before that. You know, they just gave me a chance, and, you know, with Trae being out, you know, I saw that as an opportunity to just show the world, like, what I could do. And, you know, not only just by scoring, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, those guys are, the other guys are getting the ball, and the other guys are getting the opportunity to, you know, develop their game around me, and, you know, not making it about myself, because I know I could score, but I also wanted to, you know, make sure the other guys were comfortable.
And so, Brandon, when you finally signed that NBA deal, man, how happy that make you feel? What was that day like when you finally signed that contract and took that picture and the Hawks posted on social media that you had finally signed as a that multi-year contract with them?
It felt great. It's like a dream come true. You know, that's things that young kids dream of, playing in the NBA. You know, some people don't even dream it because they think it's too far-fetched. And so just being one of like 300 and something players to play in the NBA is crazy to me to think about it, to think that I'm one of those guys. And, you know, just thinking about all the hard work, all the, you know, long nights, long days of working out and sore bodies and everything that comes with the process. Just thinking about it, it made it a lot better, a lot sweeter for me. And so also, it wasn't even about me at that moment. I know how long my mom has worked to make sure I had everything I wanted. And so just to see the smile on her face, like, it was like a job well done for her. And seeing my people happy, that's all that really mattered to me, because, you know, I just want to make people around me happy. And it worked out. It worked out for the best.
Now, Brandon, what's been your biggest adjustment being on the main roster now full time for you? What's been your biggest adjustment trying to find your way, being a part of the 15-man roster rather than the two-way guy?
My biggest adjustment probably is that's hard to say. But I pretty much play the same way whether I'm in College Park or with the Hawks. Maybe just that role, you know, just you have to be a lot more alert, a lot more ready when you're coming off the bench, because you have to read the game more, because you got to see what's going on as far as weaknesses and what's happening on the court. What is the other team doing that's hurting us? So what are we doing that's hurting them? So I have to already be ready. And just that window sometimes is really, really small. So the margin of error is tight. So I have to be ready, you know, from the jump all the time, mentally prepare myself as a professional now. And like just know that there's going to be a time where I might not get in, or a time that I'm in where it's crucial. You know, you just never know when you're going to play, what's going to happen and stuff like that. So you just got to be mentally prepared every day.
The thing about LP is LP will try to find a spark. So you never know when he'll call your number. And how has it been to be able to play for LP and be around him, and how his even cool keel is as a coach? There's not one of these rah-rah guy. He kind of is keep it cool and kosher with you, say what you can do, but he don't really just go at you like some guys do.
I built a little relationship with LP, man. You know, he's tough on me, which I expect and which I appreciate. You know, he wants nothing but the best for me. He's always giving me advice, always telling me what I can do better. Even when I'm having those good games or those games that nobody expects me to have, you know, he's always making sure I'm level-headed. You know, you keep going, you keep doing it. You know, you don't stop. He's always telling me to, you know, stay watching film and stuff like that. And so, you know, just having him in a year like this, it's definitely been a great connection with me and him. So I'm just looking forward to, you know, being with him longer and growing with him.
The last one I got for you, Brandon. I'll try to talk to you off the air about this, but your man, Michael Fly, had him on the show a few weeks ago. Talked about how good of a player you are, how happy he is for you. Talk about how Coach Dooley and Coach Fly really hit you down in Florida Gulf Coast and Dunk City down there in Fort Myers in your time there.
Oh, man. Of course, those my guys down there. I don't keep up with a lot of them, but I do talk to some of them on Twitter, and I always keep up with you know, the stats and stuff. You know, Joe Dooley is over at Eastern Carolina now, doing this thing. So, you know, everyone is moving in the right direction, which is most important. But, you know, I always have love for Florida Gulf Coast. And I tell Fly all the time, you know, thank you. And he always say, don't thank me. You know, I'm thanking you. But I'm like, you guys gave me the platform to excel, and even when I thought leaving UCF that, you know, basketball wasn't going to be, you know, my main priority or something like that, you know, it turned out to be like the biggest thing of my life. And so, you know, Florida Gulf Coast, our athletic director, Ken Kavanaugh, they gave me an opportunity, you know, to showcase my talents. And Coach Dooley, you know, he really took me under his wing and basically gave me the keys to the team. And, you know, I just every day I wanted to be that guy that just made sure we were getting better. You know, whether I was playing, not playing, hurt, I just tried to make sure that each guy, you know, wanted to give it their all and, you know, represent the name on their chest. And so I always have love for Florida Gulf Coast and my coaches and everyone who's helped me when I was around there.
Well, Brandon, thank you for your time today, brother. We'll see you tomorrow night, man, at the game before the Catch the Witches, seeing you in person, brother. Best luck to you going forward. Thank you again, man. We're definitely pulling for you, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me. You know, excited to see you tomorrow and, you know, chop it up some more.
No doubt, folks. It's Brandon Goodwin, Atlanta Hawks, here on the Boss Man Show.
How do you feel about your office? Is it just a space for your company, or is it a space to help you grow your company? From new HQs to satellite offices, with WeWork, you can find a space that works for you. Visit we.co/spacematters to learn more.
All right, folks, back on the Boss Man Show. Time for the JC Sports Report with me and my man, JC Smith, out of Memphis. Bruh, how I love treating your brothers down there in the 901, my man.
Man, life is good, man. You know, we just rolling on by, man. It's like January. It took forever. And now February just flying by, man. But everything's good, boss.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, bro, let's start off with this, man. Look, man, the Cavs coaching mess. John Beilein resigned from his duties. Former Memphis Grizzlies coach J.B. Bickerstaff, now the head coach going forward. He had problems connecting with players. He called them thugs, but he claimed he meant slugs, and he's just 6-7 years old. I mean, he's been in college all his life, and I don't think it was a right fit. I think they should have hired J.B. from the get-go. He's an NBA guy. He's dealt with young teams. He knows how to develop players, and he knows NBA counts, how the NBA works, and he's respected around the league. But bringing in Beilein with all that money and his college style wasn't a good fit for the Cavs, who already are a mess.
Yeah, that was, like I said, wasn't necessarily the greatest fit in the world to begin with, you know, for the Cavs. Like I said, Beilein, a respected college coach, did great things in Michigan, took them to the Final Four and everything. I never liked to hire from the jump, to be honest with you. Like I said, it never seemed like a good fit, even early on, man. And like you said, you know, you had the thing earlier a few weeks ago, about a month or two ago, about the, like I said, making a thug comment, you know, and all that, man. Just like I said, this wasn't a good fit, man. And a Cavaliers team that, you know, is basically dead last, you know, in the East Conference right now, 14-40 overall. So, like I said, they need to move on and, like I said, find a better fit. And you really need a young team like that. You really need a young coach who relates well as far as player development. And that's, like I said, J.B. Bickerstaff, you know, had a very short run here in Memphis. However, was very liked and well-respected by, you know, players, fans alike. You know, I would have loved to have seen J.B. get another year or so here. But, like I said, you know, well-deserved for him. And I think, you know, it's going to be, of course, a rebuilding process in Cleveland, but I think JB is the right guy at the right time for Cleveland to move forward with and try to develop, you know, the young talent that they do have going forward, you know, with guys like Kyle Sexton and everything there. But like I said, I like JB Bickerstaff, and then, you know, Beilein was just one of those guys. It was never a good fit from the start.
And I feel like they probably should have fired Tyronn Lue. That's what first mistake after LeBron James left firing Tyronn Lue. I mean, he's a championship coach. I know you can say, well, he had LeBron. He's still a championship coach. You know, he still won the ring. So he came from Doc Rivers' tree. So I'm pretty sure he knows what he's doing. Tom Thibodeau's tree as well. So he knows what he's doing. So you fire him, go with Larry Drew as interim coach the rest of the year. Then you bring in Beilein at Bickerstaff. Who's a more player development guy than Ty Lue is, of course. But it's right. Like you ended up with a proper fit. But Ty Lue should have been given a chance to try to develop the young talent, because he had been a championship head coach before, in my opinion.
Exactly. Like I said, their first mistake, you know, letting Ty Lue get out of there and allowing him to go elsewhere, man. Like I said, you know, if ownership will allow JB the time to, you know, get that team and get them together and kind of, you know, build on what they have, man, I think JB can do a good job, you know, in the years to come there.
No, bro, we hadn't talked to you since the trade deadline went down. It was a very explosive trade deadline. Memphis traded for Justice Winslow and got the contract of Deion Waiters and shipped the other contract, James Johnson, off to Minnesota. And what are your thoughts losing Jay Crowder and those and Jay Crowder to the Miami Heat, Iguodala to the Miami Heat as well, and Solomon Hill? What are your thoughts on the Grizzlies' moves? How do you think the piece is going to fit with Winslow out for the rest of the year? And they took two key cards of the rotation out to go with to Miami to make the money work.
You know what, man? As far as what the Grizz did over the deadline, the front office, like I said, those guys have been hitting home runs left and right, it seems like, with all the moves they've been making. And I got to agree with this one also. You know, I don't really have any qualms about it. You know, they were basically weighing two options, your short-term success versus your long-term success. And they wanted to go the long game, the long route, you know. Yeah, you know, you probably messed up things as far as the short term, you know, with Jay Crowder being there, him being a veteran presence, a guy that could knock down some buckets for you there. They could possibly help you, you know, maintain that playoff spot, the eighth spot in the Western Conference going forward. But long term, you're talking about a guy in Justice Winslow, when healthy, you know, can be, you know, a 3-and-D type of guy, you know, a guy that hovers around, you know, in high 30%. Range there, 35, 36, 37, 8, 38% 3-point shooting there when he's healthy. So, you know, I think it was a great move. And the Grizz were banking on the fact that they knew that they were not going to be able to really be a player in free agency this year. So they felt like, you know, if they did have a little salary cap room, you know, but they didn't because of all the moves they made, taking on some of those, you know, bad contracts or whatever off the other team's hands. They didn't really have the money to really go out and get a guy, you know, they thought really, you know, be a building piece for them in the future. So they figured, why not go ahead and make a move and be a trade that they would have tried to do in free agency anyway with Justice Winslow, man. So, like I said, I like it. And if Justice can get healthy, man, like I said, we don't need him this year. He's a guy we're looking at the long term. If he can get healthy, throw him into the rotation, man. You talking about Justice, Jai, Jaren, Dylan Brooks. That's a nice little foursome, you know, to deal with, man. So, you know, if the Grizz are banking on this working out, man, and it could be another home run in the next 2-3 years, man.
No doubt. And also, Wiggins to Golden State for D'Angelo Russell. I think Wiggins may be in the best place that he could be to learn from Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green on how to be professional. And play the Harrison Barnes role, be a better version of Harrison Barnes.
Exactly. You know, I think it's going to be a great move, like I said, for Wiggins, man. And depending on what happens, you know, with the draft coming up, you know, with Golden State and who they may get in the draft, like Golden State could be right back in it, you know, right back in thinking things next year, just that quick, you know. But, yeah, like I said, Wiggins, a guy that, you know, hovers around, you know, what, 19, 20 points per game. Athletic as hell, you know. Some people have questioned, you know, his competitive spirit, questioned his toughness, but he's a kid, man. Like I said, you put him in the right situation, put him in, you know, with champions like Steph and Clay and Draymond, let them, you know, kind of go to work on him and, you know, teach him, you know, how to be a winner. You know, you talk about a guy that's really never been in a pressure situation. He's going to have the opportunity going forward next year. And like I said, I think, you know, sky's the limit for Wiggins, man. You talk about a guy that's still with 23, 24 years old, you know. So, like I said, I like the move, man. I also like, you know, my guy D'Angelo Russell going to Minnesota as well, you know, and part of that deal, man. You know, this, it's so rare that you get, you know, guys that average 20 points a game to be traded for each other like that. It's only happened like a handful of times in NBA history, you know, straight up deal like that. So, I think, you know, both deals can be beneficial for both players, man. And like I said, I pretty much like all the moves that they were made overall, you know, across the league.
I want to talk about the move of Marcus Morris to the Clippers. That was a boss move right there. You pretty much gave up nothing to get
exactly
a first round pick.
Exactly. The Clippers, yeah,
make,
man.
Make you
Clippers
guard all five positions out
exactly
there. Your real lineup of Harold Williams with Marcus Morris, Kawhi, and Paul George is going to close with. You know, you have to guard all of them. They're going to have to wear Patrick Beverly in there as well, maybe Morris at the five with PG and Kawhi the front court up with Lou Williams and Pat Beverly. I mean, you're finishing 6 men or so, man. You pretty, and also that's gonna be tough to deal with when you got that option of even a 6-man finishing lineup like that. If you want to go big or small based on matchups,
no doubt.
Having Morris there,
no doubt. Like I said, he's always been one of my favorite players, man. Tough guy, can knock down the three, great defender. You know, you add a tough guy to a team that's already, you know, built for tough. You know what I'm saying? With guys like Patrick Beverly, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, man, like Montrezl Harrell, like those guys are just, you know, they're tough guys and they're great players. And you add Morris to the mix. Don't forget, you know, the move that was made the other night, you know, with the Pistons buying out Reggie Jackson's contract. Now you add Reggie Jackson to the mix. Like, the Clippers are making things known. They're claiming their stake now that they are going after the championship this year. You know, the Lakers were not able to make any moves, really, to kind of bolster their roster. The Clippers are making all the moves right now out there, man. Like, the Clippers are tough, man. And they added more pieces to that puzzle. Like, it's going to be hard. Like, I think the Bucks, Milwaukee Bucks, going to have a hard time, you know, beating the Clippers, man, if they match up in the finals. So, I love the moves, man. Morris, Reggie Jackson, the Clippers are really, really – they're going for it. They're going for it this year, man.
Yeah, like you said, I kind of mentioned about the last topic with the buyout market. Like, the Clippers are getting the buyout market started already with Reggie Jackson going there. Marvin Williams went to the Bucks in the buyout market. Gukas went to the Mavericks in the buyout market. So the buyout market is definitely, like, you know, slowing right now. But I think it'll pick up in the next week or so with March 1st coming up here, Fast and Furious. So, Mo Harkless has been talked about being released from the Knicks to join the Lakers because they missed on Collison, they missed on Jackson, and all you got left is like J.R. Smith and people like that out there for free right now. And you don't know who may free up between now and March the 1st, but the buyout market for the Lakers is not looking good, and plus they're already at 15 men on the roster, so that means they have to cut somebody. Probably Troy Daniels, it'll be one candidate that'll cut. Will they get rid of Boogie Cousins? If you scout him a second player, I wonder. That's the question for the Lakers now.
You're right, man. Like I said, you know, it's slim pickings now, you know, as far as guys out there that can really help you. I don't see a J.R. Smith really helping the Lakers at this point. You know, and then also, the Lakers are putting all their eggs into the LeBron Anthony Davis basket. Like, keep in mind, if the Lakers don't win a championship this year, they got some problems. They got some things they got to figure out because LeBron is not getting any older. AD still has the option, you know, if he wants to move on or not, you know, go play elsewhere. So, you know, it's pretty much boom or bust this year for the Lakers. You know what I'm saying? As far as they have to win, their window is this year. I don't see this team staying intact the way it is going forward if they don't win during this postseason run, man. Like, they have no other choice but to get it done. If they don't get it done, like I said, you know, it's up in the air. LeBron, hey, he's one, you know, real severe injury away from being out, like he was last year, you know, for a handful of games, stretch of games there. So, like I said, they got to figure some things out, man, as far as the buyout market, who's out there. But I don't really see anybody out there, you know, that's notable that can really help them, you know, as far as the, you know, match the fireworks, the firepower that you know, the Clippers have right now.
No doubt, well, bruh. We got it all in here. The Jesse Sports Report, weekly on the Boss Man. So, bruh, good to get you back on this week, man. We got to keep the train rolling, bruh. I got to keep this radio domination flowing, my man.
I'm with it. I'm with it, Boss. Appreciate you as always, my guy.
Anytime, bruh. Jesse Smith on the Boss Man Show.